Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside. Repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hey guys, it's John here. And before we get into this week's episode, I have some breaking news that I have to share with you guys on this week's episode. This news was broken after we recorded this week's episode that you're about to listen to, and Darren's currently still on vacation, so she's not here. Sorry, Darren. But it's big, and it's breaking, and it's very exciting. We are so excited to let you guys know that we're doing our first ever live podcast right here in New York City. You can come and see us and watch us as we record, and maybe you'll see Matt, but we haven't quite figured out how we're going to get Matt into the show. But anyway, if you're in the New York City area, which by the way is our biggest listenership, most of the people listening to our show are from New York City, we're going to be doing a live show at Caroline's on Broadway on Thursday, September 28th. The show starts at 7:30 p.m. You can buy tickets by going to www.carolines.com, click schedule, and then click on September 28th. Or if you can click on the link in the description of this episode of the podcast, you can go directly to our page and buy the tickets. We are so excited about this, and Darren is very excited. We were working on this for a few weeks, and we just weren't able to announce it yet. So we'll be back to talk all about it beforehand, but so excited. If you're in the New York City area, please come out and see us and say hello. Also, if you're coming, be sure to let us know. You can tweet us or Instagram us at Jay Thrasher and Carpe Darren. Okay, that's such exciting news. What a great way to start the show. Let's get back to our regularly scheduled podcast. See you guys. It's another episode.
It is.
Of Martinis and Murder is Back. Murder. I love when you did that last week, by the way.
Oh, Martinis and Murder is Back. Well, I have to start singing. I've told you this.
The way you said it, though, just stuck in my head. Like, I was like, this past weekend, I just kept thinking about the show for some reason. And I was like, Martinis and Murder is Back.
Yeah, it fits.
It sounds like an old, like almost like Three's yeah. Company or something. I don't know how to explain
it. It's definitely
it.
Like a 70s sitcom, yeah. And we're the family, like those queer couples, oh. You know, that like the audience yes. knows we're gay, but like you yeah. don't really know that
like
we're gay.
Like Full House.
Yeah. No, how okay. everyone, how the Olsen twins were the gayest. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know
perfect,
what you're talking about.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, welcome to another episode. We've had a busy couple of weeks. We did the Holloway stuff.
Oh my gosh, that was really incredible.
And go ahead.
I was going to say, I hope all of you have been watching The Disappearance of Natalie Holloway because yeah. the leads in that story, even 12 years later, are crazy.
And news is breaking on like a weekly basis with, yeah. this, with that investigation. So it's very interesting. So stay tuned for that.
Definitely.
Darren, we've both been at the beach a lot this summer.
Yeah, I just got back from 5 days in the Hamptons.
And I've practically been living at Rockaway Beach in New York City.
And not to be vain, with all of that sun and salt water, how do we look so good?
Well, we both started using Kapari Beauty's line of products made from 100% organic coconut oil.
And all of their products are all natural with no sulfates, silicones, GMOs, or parabens. And you're an animal lover, right, John?
Yep.
Well, all of their products are cruelty-free.
That's awesome. And I've been using the sheer oil as a face moisturizer, and it's so light. It doesn't even feel like you have anything on.
I've been using their Body Glow, and the shimmer is amazing. It makes my skin look so healthy in the summer.
You really do look so summery and shimmery, and you smell amazing.
Say aloha to your best skin and hair of your life with Kapari. Go to KapariBeauty.com/martinis to get 20% off your order. That's Kapari, K-O-P-A-R-I, beauty.com/martinis for 20% off. KapariBeauty.com/martinis.
I guess we should get right to the drink of the week. Also,
I'm a little parched.
I am a little parched too. I had it my usual, I have a coffee around like, you know, a couple hours before we start recording, just to like, you know, kickstart my recording session here. But Matt, why don't you come over here and tell us what we are having this week? Because I don't even have a clue what we're talking.
And
there's a whole description and I'm like, why? There's different ingredients.
And what? Before we get to that, I just want to say someone called you out for drinking coffee. And I think it needs to be stated that you need to start participating in this game called Martinis and Murder. You're getting a little Matt on me.
That's a good
and
point.
I don't want to be the only one here just drinking at work.
I
like,
do
what
drink.
The hell? Am I the only one putting an effort?
No, I do drink. Don't get me wrong. It's just I need some coffee or tea to, like, kickstart my...
it out beforehand, Don.
We usually record these at the end of the day, okay? It's been a long day.
Figure it out.
It's,
Matt.
It's up to Matt now. Take it away.
Wow, it feels good to have John and Darren fighting instead of me and John and Darren.
We still hate you.
Well, it's also a big, a long, like, end game. Like, this is part of our strat. It's very Game of Thrones.
Yes, yeah. It is.
So, this week, and I'm sure I'm going to get shit about this, but there is absolutely no connection to the case whatsoever. It's completely random. I opened up my liquor cabinet, which is pretty extensive, and saw a liqueur 43. It's liqueur 43. I don't know how to say it. It's Spanish. It's a Spanish liqueur.
Wait, I love that you were just like, I just opened my liquor cabinet and saw this liqueur. Like, it was just there. Like, you didn't even really, like, do it for the show. It was just there.
Santa exists, so maybe he brought it.
No, I did purchase it for a drink. I think it actually was in the key lime margaritas. I think it was one of the ingredients in the key lime margaritas, which you both
So it's loved. Guaranteed to love, okay.
And it is from Spain. It's supposed to be 1,000 years old. It has 43 separate ingredients, but some of those ingredients are a mystery. They don't divulge all of that.
Why does this feel like Dr. Pepper to me?
And also, is one of them vermouth? Because if so, I don't want to drink it. Thank you.
Can you extract each ingredient for us so we... Okay.
I can send it to a lab and have it tested. And it has a strong vanilla flavor backed with orange, citrus, and other spices. I might put a drop of orange bitters in each drink just for the hell of it. I think John is going to like it because it's a little sweet. You know?
Okay.
You know? But it's also refreshing. We're going to have it over ice with a... orange peel.
I was going to ask about the garnish. I see you took my note from the previous week. This is called a learning teachable moment for you, Matt, and I'm very proud of you today. You can continue.
I'm taking the garnishes very seriously after being scolded. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
I do want to say, I think it's worth mentioning, I walked into Matt's office earlier and I was like, I don't know what we're drinking today, but if you wanted to do a key lime martini, I would not stop you.
But you need to, like, keep it, you know, like, he has to surprise us with that, so
no,
we really
right.
appreciate it, because once we start having it forever, then we're going to OD on it, it's going to be too much.
That's a good way to put it, yes.
Let's get into the murder.
Yes, let's do that now.
As he shakes up our orange 43 ingredients of some sort.
Oh, he forgot something.
Yeah. It wouldn't be an episode of Martinis and Murder if Matt came prepared. So it.
Oh, I hope he can get back in.
He'll be fine.
Yeah, he'll be fine.
Should All we right. get into it?
Yes. Okay, so let's talk about Judy Parker.
Let's do it.
Judy Parker was born in 1969 in Texas. Her mother had... had her at a very early age, and she was kind of raised in poverty. Her father was not in the picture, and she never even found out who he was. So right off the bat, not
Could
a good
be
scenario.
Not a good, maybe not her ideal family scenario. Sitch.
Yeah. In 1984, when she was 14 years old, Judy met a pipe fitter from Indiana and got married with her mother's blessing. So I don't know what a pipe fitter is. It sounds like one of those old-timey, like, he was a blacksmith.
He's a chimney sweep. Yeah.
A chimney sweep. She moved with a man to Gary, Indiana, where at 16, Judy had her first daughter, Christina. Now, you're going to want to keep these names in your back pocket.
Right.
The following year, she had a son named Daniel. Their family struggled, and Judy continued to live in poverty. They were sleeping on a mattress on the floor above a bar. So,
oh my God.
Just very
so extreme. New York City living.
Right. Welcome to New York City. I literally did that my first couple years here.
Yeah, exactly.
At 19, Judy left her husband and took a job selling vacuum cleaners door to door, where she met John Parker in 1989.
I think it's important to mention here, because we were reading the story, you know, selling vacuum cleaners door to door. First off,
such an old timey.
That was a thing back then, you know, like Avon ladies and things like that. But goddamn, she chose sell nail polish, sell something you can take.
Yeah.
Vacuum cleaners?
Well, we'll find out here in a minute. It seemed kind of like a lucrative situation.
No, it is, but like, holy hell, muscles.
I also think now would be a good time, Darren, to reveal to everybody my extreme fascination with, you might know where I'm going with this, Roombas.
Yes.
Yes, I think this could be the connection to the case.
You need to bring out the timeless art of selling Roombas door to door.
By the way, I am responsible for many people having purchased Roombas. I'm not exaggerating. I know at least 10 people in my life that after I told them how great my Roomba was, went out and bought one. So Roomba, if you'd like to sponsor and send me one of your new
Taco Bell, if you'd like to put a couple tacos on a Roomba, have the Roomba come to me.
Oh, and like serve us tacos?
In it.
I love
this. It's your own like, you know, personal chauffeur.
I absolutely love that
idea. Okay. Now, so as you said, at age 19, you know, she left her husband. By the way, she's 19 and she's leaving her husband, takes a job. She meets John in 1989, not John Thrasher.
Not me. Right. Correct.
John Parker. John was the exact same age as Judy, so they were both very young. David Parker, who was John's brother, said, quote, he wanted to be successful. His goal was to be rich. Anytime there was a sales contest, it seemed like he won. He won a brand new car. He won a brand new Harley Davidson. He won Rolex watches. What a lucky fucking guy, because I don't even participate in those things because I know I'm going to lose.
I always lose everything, yeah.
I once won a cakewalk when I was like 8 years old and I got like a tray of brownies.
Oh, wow.
So.
What's a cakewalk exactly?
Like, I don't know if this was just like our school. Maybe it's a thing. I have no idea. Mm-hmm. It's where every kid stands on like a different number, kind of like musical chairs, and you walk around until the music stops.
Ooh, drinks.
Thank you. In our Martinis and Murder special glasses.
From Pick Me Cups, although I have Matt's glass, I've noticed.
It's so chilled. Do I have...
And you have mine.
Right, I have John's.
I have a feeling these are poisoned, but cheers, bitches.
Cheers, bitches.
But anyway, continue about...
So you're on... Hold on.
I'm not slurping. Oh, my God.
That's delish.
That tastes like candy.
Yeah, that does taste like candy.
Matt, this is
what the
really
fuck
good.
Does that taste like? It tastes like candy.
It tastes very like some smooth. Sort of candy. I'm into
so
it.
So it's like every kid, you know, you start walking. And there's like a baked good item matching up to the number.
Oh.
And you walk around until the music stops. And then someone pulls a random number. And the person on that random number wins that baked item.
Oh.
I won one time.
What a great experience.
Needless to say.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Anyway, so he's winning. I'm winning cake and brownies. John's
winning
Rolex watches.
Yes,
so John found financial success in the vacuum distribution business quickly, and Judy was just awed at his abilities. Remember, she was living in poverty.
Yeah, right.
Kailani Gopal, a clinical psychologist, told Snapped, she saw his potential. She saw his ability to achieve what he wanted to achieve. It sounds like a very good couple match. I mean, if you're viewing it that way, I mean, you kind of want to bring each other up. So this sounds good. John helped with Judy's divorce and even became a surrogate father, taking in Judy's two children, as you said, Christina and Daniel from before.
Right.
In 1992, just 3 years after they met, John and Judy got married and had their first child together. And he started his own vacuum distribution franchise. And together, Judy and John worked to make the business grow. So there's a little family organization here.
Yeah,
I like
that's
it.
A good way. We should definitely mention that because the family business kind of has something to do with it later on in this episode.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Tanya, John's sister now and Judy's sister-in-law, said that John made his first million by the time, and maybe this is our connection to the case, he was 29, which happens to be yours truly's age,
uh-huh.
and I made my first million
by the time you were 70.
By the time I was 75. So yeah. There's my connection to the case.
I mean, imagine being our age and having worked so much that you've
this
made
a million dollars. This is 1992.
It's crazy to me.
This is 1990.
Meanwhile, you and I were, I mean, I was living on a mattress above a bar not that long ago, you know?
I mean, I'm still talking about when I won brownies when I was seven. Right. So where are our lives going?
We have a lot to achieve still.
So he made his first million by the time he was 29, clearly a successful man. And 5 years after they got married, so this is like 97 now, they had their second child. So yeah. Judy has four children now, two right. with the first husband, two with John.
There you go. So how successful was life for them? Well, the couple bought a lavish home in Indiana's Crown Point, an upscale neighborhood just south of Merrillville.
Wait, Matt, have you lived there?
Yes,
have
let's
you ever
check
been
in.
There?
He said,
I was going to say, he said a polite no to our listeners out there who live there.
But you do. Yeah, we were in Indiana for Crime Con.
Another connection to the case.
But we did not go to Merrillville. However, had we known, maybe we would have stopped by just
to
do research. It's research. David Parker, John's brother, said, quote, "These houses run in the $500,000 range now. A $500,000 house in Indiana is like a $3 million mansion in California." So you get the picture. It's a huge house just in that location. You know, it's a little cheaper than, say, L.A. or even New York City.
And the properties, like, are massive. Yeah. I mean, a $3 million mansion in L.A. is still, like, probably not even that impressive.
Well, the other thing, too, is I will say, having been to Indiana for Crime Con with Matt, everything there is just huge and spacious, and there's endless space. Like
rolling fields.
Yeah, and coming from New York City, you know, it's just, like, something you don't really see it very often. I mean, I grew up in the country, if you will, but there were mountains, so you didn't get the large open spaces in the same way.
Right.
So it was
and
was
think about how Judy's feeling because she grew up, you know, and lived with her kids on a mattress and grew up in poverty. Yeah. This is Disneyland.
Well, the money began to affect Judy's children, Christina and Daniel. A local journalist told Snapped, quote, "The two were known as a little bit on the spoiled side." At 16, Christina was becoming a defiant teenager and started getting into trouble. The local police commander said that Christina was into older boyfriends, drugs, and liquor. Same. Just kidding. Yeah. I'm not into all
that. Same.
15-year-old Daniel's behavior wasn't any better. John's brother said, quote, "He took my brother's brand new Navigator at age 12 or so, took it for a joyride, and smashed up all the neighbors' mailboxes all over the neighborhood." So, you know, I think that's a telltale sign of there might be an issue if your 12-year-old's jumping in your Lincoln Navigator and driving it through people's yards.
I mean, 12? I wasn't even, like, considering that. Still focusing on me winning brownies when I was 7, when I was 12.
When I was 12, I was going to see Spice World by myself. I've said this before.
But look at the picture of the kid. He looks a little bit rebellious.
Yeah, we have photos here. Matt actually was able to do some work this week.
He looks like he would have been a rebellious guy. Thank you, John, for shouting out your boss.
I know.
And I don't have to do all the legwork here.
I usually say this for you, but yeah, we do have photos.
He does look like a little badass.
Yeah, he does. John would harshly discipline the kids, forbidding smoking, drinking, and drugs. After 10 p.m. on April 17th, 2003, John and Judy went out to dinner to celebrate their 10th wedding anniversary.
Sweet.
Yeah, the evening was going well, but Judy got a call from her daughter, Christina, saying that she had left some homework in the family's office. Remember, they own their own business, so they had apparently been there at some point earlier while Christina was like doing homework.
Yeah, perfectly reasonable call.
Yeah. Yeah, so her parents agreed to pick it up for her, and then after dinner, the couple made a detour to the office and went inside. Judy came out back to the car and waited for John to return, but then it got kind of scary, and Judy says, quote, "All of a sudden, I hear pop, pop, and I look, and I see somebody going, I see a figure, I saw him going down, and that's when I'm like, my heart just stopped," end quote. She said she saw an individual running towards the west, but couldn't see who it was. She also said when she recovered from the shock, she got out of the car and rushed to her husband's side. John wasn't moving as she ran and called 911. When the police arrived, they rolled John over to try to resuscitate him, but he had no signs of life and had been shot in the back of the head at close range.
Oh, my God. Brutal.
So the police commander described the wound, quote, "The bullet had entered the back of his head at the base of his skull," end quote. Only two clues were found at the scene. The first were two shell casings, which indicated that it was a .25 caliber handgun. The second clue was his wallet was missing. So now it's starting to look like this is was a bit of a robbery situation. Yeah.
You know, and maybe they knew that he had his own business or that he was wealthy. Right. He's coming out of his own office. There's a lot of potential happenings here. So police had had little to work from given these two clues from the crime scene. And the only witness was Judy, as we had said. So when police brought her in for questioning, Judy said she didn't know who would want John dead. And she suspected it was a robbery because the wallet was missing, which I thought as well.
Yeah.
She said he had never been a robbery victim before, and police asked if John would give up his wallet quickly, which is also interesting because I've never – like, how do you know? Like, wouldn't that be an assumption? I mean
– I thought the same thing.
Would I know if my girlfriend would give up her wallet quickly? Right. Like, is that a conversation you have? But Judy says, oh, yes, we've discussed that before. If anybody ever comes up to us, just give them what they want so that – just so that we walk away. You know, we have our family.
And on one hand, it's like, okay
– do we have these talks?
Maybe they do because they're prominent. You know, she, at least he is, has a lot of money. Maybe that is something you think about when you have a lot of money is how would you handle that particular situation? I know.
It seems like a parent to a kid conversation, though, as opposed to like –
that's a good point.
You know?
Wink, wink. That's my little tagline here. Oh, Matt's chiming in. Yeah. Oh, what would we do? Good. Matt's producing. I'm impressed here.
Wow, Matt.
That was
mid-snore that he said that. He must be
oh, my God. He has
if
a
somebody was – I've thought about this several times because a couple of my friends got robbed at college. Yeah. If I was approached and put myself in danger, they can have the 50 cents in my fucking wallet and, like, my $5 I have to an ice cream store that I've been saving for 4 years because I refuse to give it up. So they can have those things. Yeah, my life is worth way more than anything I have in my bank account anyway, and I would do it.
You also have to think, too, about the time period. I mean, nowadays, people don't carry cash the way they used to.
No.
And most of the wallet – like, my wallet is on the back of my phone. It's a debit card, and maybe the other thing that has value – value is my Metro card to get on the subways. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to get any money by using any of this stuff. So
I do often think about like the most expensive thing on our bodies at any given time, and it's probably your iPhone.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good
point. Outside of a piece of clothing, perhaps, but like it's a different resale value. Like it's probably probably any electronic equipment that you have because you can easily cancel credit cards. You can easily do all that stuff. So even if they pushed me into an ATM and wanted me to empty my bank account with all the cameras, I guess I wouldn't feel I would just do it. It wouldn't be worth any sort of risk.
No, I mean, what material things are ever going to be worth trying to like argue with somebody who is insane enough to try to rob you? You know what I mean?
100%.
Yeah,
I agree. Good question, Matt.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. Wow.
So
they had
that discussion. They were smart. Now, John, you and I are prepared.
Right.
However, when John's body was found, here's the weird thing. He still had a Rolex on and some very expensive jewelry. Now, this Rolex was worth $20,000. So the prosecutor in the case would later ask why someone would rob John, why someone would rob his wallet, but leave, again, this really expensive piece of jewelry on him. Like, that doesn't seem correct considering the fact that it seemed like John didn't fight back because he was shot. Like, you could have easily just taken and run. So that's suspicious to me. The robbery theory didn't make sense to investigators based on this, and the police lieutenant said, quote, who would be in that deserted, desolate warehouse area at 9:30 at night waiting to rob somebody? Also a good point. Like, what are you staking out here? That seems – it's like being at a strip mall, you know, after it closes.
That's
like,
a good point.
What are you expecting?
I keep saying that's a good point instinctively, and thank you to everyone who's pointed out that I say that so often. But, Darren, you just make so many good points.
Thank you.
Yeah, you have to think about the entire kind of premise of what's going on here. I mean, this isn't, you know, the bustling streets of Manhattan. It kind of seems like, at least from what we've known and what we've researched, you're at a desolate warehouse where nobody should be after hours.
Right. However, if John was that wealthy wearing a $20,000 Rolex, perhaps he could have been, you know, a target of a premeditated robbery. So there are a number of factors to consider here, and the investigators had no other leads and began investigating John's business, family, and marriage. John's family was shocked and had no clues as to who could have committed the murder. After a few days of investigation, the investigators finally got a tip. The tip came from the police department at a neighboring town that there might be a plot to kill John. This is fascinating. The reports actually came.
I don't
came,
like hearing you say that. There's a plot to kill John, by the way.
That's the
hearing
next.
Hearing you say that out loud kind of freaks me out.
That's Matt Tini's and murder, where it's just us talking about killing John.
Where he kills me to come onto the show.
It's our spinoff podcast. We'll talk about that later.
Okay, interesting.
So the tip actually came up from a school resource officer. It was a 6-month-old report, and it came from October of 2002, so well before John was murdered. Mm-hmm. A counselor at a local halfway house had contacted the school to report that two students had recently been flashing $6,000 cash.
Oh, just $6,000.
Where's my raise?
Yeah,
I'm not flaunting this. When approached about how they got the cash, they told the school that they actually got it from Judy's son, Daniel. Mm. But again, they're wealthy, so he could have been a spoiled brat carrying
and
around.
Just had it. Yeah.
Who knows? The Merrillville police commander told Snap for $6,000 they were going to take care of John Parker. Mm. The school brought the money to the police department, and it was stored in evidence. However, nothing happened with it.
Oh, what do you know? Another situation where the police didn't really look into this odd circumstance.
Seems like an odd misstep here. The two towns' police departments never communicated about the case, and it went uninvestigated. A journalist said the murder could have possibly been averted if the police officers would have made it known that this claim was happening. However, the two students said they did not kill John and never planned to. They just wanted to rip Daniel off and take his money. Okay. Investigators brought Daniel in for questioning, but Daniel was only 15, so that means they were legally required to bring in his mother. He wasn't a full-fledged adult yet.
Although you do hear about situations where police—
they sneakily do
it.
Yeah,
exactly.
But this one seems to be clean.
Yeah.
They also wanted his mother there because they were curious about how he got $6,000.
Which I think is weird because wouldn't you have already done this at some point? Like, it seems weird that this formality is the first time that they're having that conversation. You know what I mean?
Like, how so? Like,
well, I just mean if kids were flashing $6,000 and saying all this thing, I think you instinctively must first call the parent and like be like, by the way, this happened today at school.
Just FYI, yeah, and we're like, we're not the president's kids, so like
right.
What the hell are they doing?
I mean, I don't really know exactly what the time frame was here, so maybe I'm just assuming, but it just seemed like—
it's an absurd amount of money.
Yeah, and it's an absurd amount of money, and just the formatting around this was weird to me. Oh, right. Matt's saying, reminding us, those kids lived in a halfway house. So.
Right. The kids that were flashing around the
right.
money.
So,
but, you know.
So, yeah.
Even more suspicious about why they were flashing around $6,000.
Right.
Police had learned that John and Judy's marriage wasn't as perfect as it had seemed. John's brother said there were rumors she was having affairs. That's more than one affair. So, plural here.
Yeah, right.
A prosecutor later said, quote, one in particular that we had looked into was a gentleman who worked with the husband. A police lieutenant then added, quote, an individual that was the office manager. So talk about a family business. Now we're really getting into the weeds here. Daniel, Judy's son, told investigators he had a lot of conflict with his dad. He said, if I had trouble, he'd over-exaggerate all that stuff and hit me, throw me against the walls and stuff. So what we said before was that John, we knew, kind of was a, I don't want to say a helicopter parent, but was certainly, you know, banned kind of drugs and drinking and excessive spending. It sounded like he had a tight hold on his stepchildren.
Totally. I agree. It sounds very strict in this household.
Daniel claimed that all he'd ever wanted the two students to do was beat up his dad to let him know what it felt like, which, to be honest, when I read that, did seem like a typical kid's response.
Totally.
You know, like,
yep.
I'm smaller and I just want to, you know, get dad back.
Right.
The police lieutenant said he indicated to us at one point that he did have a conflicted relationship with John, and he admitted to us that he had coordinated with other schoolmates to have John's legs broken.
Oh, my God.
By the way, these kids are fucking 15.
This goes back to
what are they, little Tony Sopranos?
We've talked about a lot of young people committing crimes, and I'm just like, where do you guys come up with this stuff? Like, how is it okay for you to think about this stuff
you're
and
going,
think that it's appropriate?
You're going from like zero to midnight.
Yeah,
like immediately.
Exactly.
It's crazy. He admitted he had given money to the students, but Daniel denied having anything to do with his stepfather's death. He claimed he just wanted to beat him up. When his father wasn't beaten up, he claimed he gave up, and Judy claimed she did not give Daniel the money. So sort of like a standstill here.
Yeah, exactly.
She also said, quote, I did not hire anybody, I did not approach anybody, I did not ask anybody, end quote, and claimed no involvement in the murder. Investigators let Judy go as they didn't have any evidence to keep her. Daniel was arrested with enough probable cause for murder, which, you know, that seems right to me, considering he admitted to give the kids money with a premeditated motive. The police commander told Snap that Danny fully implicated himself in a plot to do something to John, and now John was dead.
So they were able to connect at least a couple of these dots and say, hey, it looks like you've basically implicated yourself. We now can connect these dots, and you're under arrest.
We have some sort of lead here.
Right.
We have some sort of, like, direct connection. However, the next day, this just made me shocked. Yeah. The next day, the police found an error in Daniel's Miranda rights. Judy waived Daniel's rights as she was his mother, but she was a suspect and therefore did not have the ability to do so. The police commander explains, if a parent is a suspect in a crime, that parent cannot then give permission for you to speak to their child. The police were unfortunately forced to release Daniel, and all of his statements were deemed inadmissible.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
So explain what your thoughts are about this, just as you said you had a reaction.
Well,
to it.
I mean, it does. It seems like the Miranda rights. I mean, for all those of you who don't know, like, you have the right, you know,
to remain silent.
Everything you say will be held against you in the court of law. Anytime you watch a TV show, whether it's Law and Order, you see this being happened. These are important to have.
Yeah.
But it seems like the most basic tool in police enforcement that, like, if you would know that it would be inadmissible if you were a suspect. So why wasn't that extra step made to realize Judy's a suspect too?
It's just endless police missteps across the board with all of these shows that we've talked about. It's crazy to me, and we'll talk more about police missteps, I think, in a future episode.
Big sip of that. Matt, I'm done with my drink.
Did you like it or not like it? You're giving me a look.
I loved it. I'm now wasted, so we're good.
Good. All right.
Tally-ho, Matt.
I have to admit, I'm also finishing mine up.
Yeah. Matt, get back up.
So, Matt, you're kind of busy. By the way, make sure mine is in the Matt cup.
Yeah.
I'm not sharing germs.
I don't want any of that.
I'm battling a cold again, as it is. Let's move on, though. What did Judy do? So Judy started to go on with her life in the year following her husband's murder. Remember, Daniel's out free. Judy's out free. No one can really point to anybody.
It almost seems like you can just wipe your hands clear of it.
I know. You know, she moved on with her life in the following year, her husband's murder, and became serious with the man she was previously having an affair with and moved in with him. She also filed a claim against John's $1.5 million life insurance policy. And I guess if you have a $1.5 million policy, that's what's going to happen.
Yes.
John's family, however, intervened to stop the claim, and an insurance investigation began and prevented her from immediately getting the money. One thought is that adultery may have hurt Judy in a divorce settlement, but John's death would leave her with everything. Their estate was around $2 million, not counting life insurance.
And remember, $2 million to anyone is like, my God. Her growing up in poverty.
Oh, right. That's a good.
Please.
I almost said that's a good point. I need to stop. I need to find a new tagline. My God.
How about Darren? You're so pretty.
Yeah, exactly. John's brother said, quote, she liquidated his cars and his gold jewelry and his expensive furniture, and my brother had a $180,000 boat. She sold it for $20,000.
By the way,
quote.
She ain't good at flipping whatever.
Round
thank
two.
You,
thanks,
sir.
Matt.
In my John glass.
We'll have to make sure we share this recipe somewhere because it's really good.
It's also a very pretty color, like urine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Is it urine?
A lot of alcohol. It could be.
Could be.
Anyway, I like it, so I'm going to keep drinking.
There's 40. There's not 44. Yeah.
She retained custody of Christina and Daniel, as well as her and John's two daughters. As you might expect, John's family was livid at the situation. So she's kind of capitalizing on this man's death in almost the exact way you might expect this all to play out.
And we don't hear a lot from John's two daughters, you know, only really hear about from Christina and Daniel, and I wonder what they're thinking during all of this whole thing. So is that kind of where it ends? Is that the end of the investigation? I don't think so. 4 years passed with little coming of anything. Investigators could not find hard evidence linking Judy or Daniel to the crime. The circumstantial evidence against the family was strong, but not enough on its own. And we often talk about circumstantial evidence and how it's key to look out, but it might not be enough to just prove a case, you know? And more circumstantial evidence piled up when police learned that an employee at the vacuum business had allegedly been solicited with money to kill John by Judy's daughter, Christina. So oh it just boy. Gets more and more and more. That employee had an alibi for the night that checked out, and he was ruled out as a possible suspect. But police began to believe that the murder was a whole family conspiracy.
It's starting to look that way.
I was going to say, I kind of believe it, too. An attorney on the case told Snapped, Judy, Daniel, and Christina had made multiple efforts to find a hitman. Mm. You know, have you ever tried to find a hitman?
I can't say that I have.
How would one find
That's
one?
That's exactly what I was thinking. I'm like, you know, all these crazy, you know, pedophiles, the sex rings,
right.
Hitman. I'm like, how do people ever get to a place where they're like, what are they, Google searching people? Like, how exactly do you get to this point? I'll never know, and I don't think I'll ever want to know, but...
But, like, hiring a hitman, is that, like, how... Okay.
I have no idea.
If you're out there and you're listening, you let us
know. Are you a hitman? Right yeah. in to Martinis and Murder.
Judy continued to live with a man she had been having an affair with at the time of the murder, the office manager in the company, remember? Daniel, who is now 19 years old, moved to Arizona to be with his stepdad. Christina became pregnant and got married, and she stayed close to town. In February of 2007, Christina's husband was found to have an outstanding warrant for marijuana.
Oh, my goodness.
It's terrible. The homicide detectives noticed the warrant and picked up Christina's husband. They took him into interrogation and immediately started asking about the murder. As soon as I read this, I just had this feeling of like they found that marijuana thing, but they really just wanted to get him in there to talk about some other stuff.
Yeah.
He became fidgety and stressed and began to talk. You know what he needed?
So
a fidget spinner.
A fidget spinner, yes.
The police commander said, he said that Christina had told him that the night of the murder that Danny had driven to his father's work and shot and killed him. He also told investigators that Christina had brought the gun and given it to Daniel.
So,
is there no loyalty, by the way? He's just like, yeah, my wife's this. Wow.
I think we should also mention, I'm assuming Danny is Daniel for anyone who's paying attention to the names here. Yeah.
But, like, he's just giving it all up.
Yeah.
He said
that Matt has something to say. Yes, Matt?
Brought.
Had he, bought the gun.
Yes, he told investigators that Christina had bought the gun
just
and given
word.
It to Daniel.
One little letter can really change the whole meaning of what we're saying here.
It absolutely can.
Yeah.
But he said the plot to kill John was not, in fact, Christina's, and the idea came from Judy. The investigators picked up Christina that same day and took her in for interrogation. She was obviously very upset. She started to cry. A police lieutenant told Snap, she admitted that she was involved. She admitted to buying the gun. She admitted that her mom had coordinated everything. She also admitted that Daniel, for those who are out there, was the shooter.
My thing, okay, I want to come back to this whole confessing thing when we get to the end of the episode, so make sure you remind me.
Okay.
Because I just find it so interesting that all it took was police picking them up on like a marijuana charge and whatever else, and they're just instantly
Boom, everyone's
confessing.
Like, yep.
So we'll come back to that.
Well, maybe they just realized that
they've been caught.
They've been, or they started to get nervous. I don't know. The family had tried multiple times to hire hitmen and failed, so Daniel committed the murder himself. Christina made the phone call that brought John to the office, as we remember, the whole homework phone call.
Right, remember, yeah.
Daniel hid out behind a dumpster near the business, and when he saw John walk out, he walked up behind him and shot him in the back of the neck. In the back of the head. But just think about how brutal that is.
I mean,
this is someone who has taken you in, has sort of given you this whole new life, and you're shooting him in point-blank range, like in the back of his fucking head.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, how do children get to this point at all? But obviously, the mother was part of it.
Well, here's the sick twisted thing. As we said, it was a whole family conspiracy. Judy actually advised Daniel to take the wallet and frame the murder as a robbery gone wrong.
And that's a great way to put it, a sick twisted thing, because as I was like reading this and then thinking back to like the first part of this story, I was like, she just sat there and knew what exactly everything was going to, like, exactly what was happening. She was basically setting the whole thing up. And that, like, kind of, like, sent chills down my spine in a way, because I'm like, the idea that someone, like, for me, the idea that someone knows that someone is about to be murdered and just doesn't do anything, that's, in some ways, I'm not saying any killer has a certain, can get away with it, or I have any sympathy, I would say. But, you know, crimes of passion are one thing. Crimes of that are premeditated and you know what's about to happen, I just think that's the most cold-hearted thing you could do.
It's definitely in a different category there. Right.
10th wedding anniversary. Matt is on his game today,
giving
us notes.
He really is. He's finally paying attention to the show that we do.
But yeah, but that's a good point. The 10th wedding anniversary.
Obviously,
as well.
She didn't think about this much through, and we kind of bring back to how they grew up, the kids and everything. But if you have kind of a harsh stepdad, you grew up in poverty on a mattress, you know, and the mom's kind of persuading you, like, we could be living in lavish lifestyle without the father. You know, maybe the kids are highly influenced by that scenario.
And you also have to think about, and this is maybe me making an assumption, but maybe this is part of her behavior, always looking to find the next opportunity.
Right.
You know, she grew up in poverty. You know, she's probably always hoping to, like, make that little bit of money. And here she has maybe looks at it as an opportunity to kind of take over that
score big
huge money. Yeah.
Well, the next day, investigators went to Arizona and confronted Daniel directly. The investigating lieutenant says, "We confronted him in the parking lot and said, 'Danny, your sister has confessed and we know everything.' Daniel reacted immediately, started crying and said, 'Okay, I'll talk to you.'"
This is what I'm saying. Like, well, this is crazy. So what, you're just
going to carry— Police can say that from the start.
I know, yeah. I just find it so bizarre the way they confess. We'll get to it in a second.
He said he was tired of this weighing on him, and he admitted that he had shot and killed his stepfather. Just, again, he's young. Like, he's a young kid. He also confirmed that Judy was behind the whole plot, which is what they suspected.
Right.
Judy actually came up with the idea, the plot, the clothing, the whole wallet thing, how to get and pay for the gun, just everything down to the tiniest detail. Daniel also said that Judy completely controlled him. He had been a 15-year-old kid, and he was essentially brainwashed by his mother. The police commander says, "Judy would say, 'You have to do this. He's going to kill me. He's going to hurt me.' Trying to put in his head that John was so abusive that something tragic may happen to her." Talk about, like, emotional trauma, emotional terrorism. However, the cops were never able to establish if John was actually abusive. Daniel said, I can't believe my mom used me like that." He was immediately placed under arrest, and shortly after, Christina was arrested back in Indiana. It took much longer to arrest Judy. Both children had to agree to testify against their mother before Judy was arrested more than a year later in November of 2008. As soon as I read this detail, I was trying to wrap my head, okay, here's a woman, you know, she's hanging out. Both of her children are now arrested for the, you know, murder of her husband, their stepfather. And she's just chilling for a year.
Yeah.
What's going through her head? Is she trying to cover something up? Is she scared that her children are going to implicate her? Like, what does she know?
And I was always wondering, too, were the police, like, tracking her? Like, what was happening?
Right.
Time?
Like, is she? Yeah.
So let's get to the trial now. In August 2009, Judy, now 39 years old, stood trial for the murder of John Parker. She was charged with murder, conspiracy to commit murder, and murder in the course of a robbery. It was alleged that Judy had tried to have John killed three times before giving up and making her son do the dirty work. According to the Times of Northwest Indiana, Judy had first tried lacing John's food with an illicit drug, but all he got was what he thought was food poisoning. Kind of sounds like if you replace Judy's name with Matt, it's a similar scenario to what's going on here.
But also, like, damn, that's cold.
I know. That's like Batman related, like a villain from a comic book
that's
or
cold.
Series or something. She then tried to hire a hitman in the company and have Daniel try to hire a hitman. Both failed. Christina, now 23, and Daniel, now 22, had also been charged but cooperated with the investigation to give substantive evidence against Judy. The defense proposed a my computer hates me today. Sorry, Matt, could you just do one little note at 37:55? Thanks. Sorry. The defense proposed a plea deal, and the prosecution agreed. Judy pleaded guilty to conspiracy to commit murder, and the judge sentenced her to 33 years in prison. 33 years.
Yeah, exactly.
September of the same year, Daniel was sentenced to 23 years in prison for pulling the trigger.
Right.
A month later, Christina, who had a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old and was pregnant, was sentenced to 5 years in prison for her role in the conspiracy. She had pleaded guilty to a charge of assisting a criminal.
Again, a whole family operation going on over here.
An attorney said, quote, "It was a fair outcome. The children were held responsible for their role in the case, but Judy took the brunt of the sentence because she was the mastermind behind it. So I think justice in this case was served," end quote. No member of the family ever actually had a trial. They all took plea deals. I think that's something that's interesting. And that obviously...
That's frustrating, though.
Yeah, that upset John's family. John Parker's brother wasn't happy about the outcome, saying, quote, "There was never a day in court. The whole thing went down like they were paying off a traffic citation."
Which does sort of feel like that, especially if you're in John's family, how they never see court. And there are, I mean, this is sort of the problem with the criminal justice system about plea bargains. And, you know, even if you're not guilty, you want to take a plea bargain because the thought of you being guilty could be this or...
Well, that's exactly what I wanted
to get to. No justice has been served, it feels like.
That's exactly what I wanted to get to is, like, these kids, regardless of who pulled the trigger, who was the mastermind, were walking around knowing all of this stuff for however long that was. And to me, that's a pretty big problem. Whether you want to make the plea deal or negotiate all of this other stuff, it is what it is. But to me, I'm like, you are just as guilty as anybody if you're walking around knowing the information around this particular, what at that time was a cold case, essentially. So I don't know. I just was so bothered by how quickly they confessed about that and like,
but you do have to wonder how much influence they were under their mother, like being so young. You know, if your mother's kind of telling you this one thing.
Yeah, that.
How responsible are you for your actions if you feel, you know, Danny described himself as sort of brainwashed by his mother. Mm-hmm. Whether or not that's clinically true, we can't say.
Yeah.
But for him to say that is a pretty strong statement. You know, who gets more time there? And who really pulled the trigger?
Well, we've talked about these kind of weird sentencings a lot over the course of the show. And you and I always kind of tend to agree about, like, you know, who's pulling the trigger and who's the mastermind always kind of get different sentencings. So, but in this case, because they were kids, I do have a little bit different of a thought about it, because when you're a child, you're under the control of your family, your parents, especially if the dad was super stepdad, whatever, was super controlling to begin with. It kind of makes sense. At the end of the day, I don't want to have any sympathy for a killer at the same time.
No, so, of course. They were all part of a huge thing, right. You know?
Yeah, so Judy will be eligible for parole in the year 2024, which actually isn't that far away. John's family had custody of Judy and John's two daughters. Daniel received parole and was released from prison in 2016.
Just last year.
Yeah. Christina, however, was released from prison but then died of a drug overdose shortly after. So just all around tragedy around this. And you have to kind of look back and think, wow, this is all basically for money in some sense.
And what does Judy think?
Yeah, I would love to
know. You know, like, what's Judy sitting in prison thinking? You know, 2024, she's getting out, so 6 years.
Right.
Crazy,
right? The story was crazy.
And one of her kids is dead. The whole thing is...
Let me ask you, as you were reading the research, and I know we were kind of reading it together at some point, did you think at any time it could have been, like, the whole family, like, in on it? I didn't think that at all until we got
to
that
point. I thought it was a little weird, you know, the whole homework situation. And
then
anytime, like, the murder happens around someone,
right.
The first thing that made me think it was a whole family conspiracy was noting that he wore a Rolex watch and the wallet was stolen.
Yeah.
That seems like a very amateur attempt at pretending it's a robbery. So I knew something would be up there.
And frankly, we've done so many shows of, like, botched, you know, murders that make it look like it's something else. I think you and I were keen to know.
Definitely.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure.
Matt's saying, oh, Matt, should we just give Matt a microphone?
No.
Think about two other kids. Oh, right, that's
right.
True.
Right, John's two kids.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, Matt's saying there's two kids and two of their dad, you know, two of them have a dad that's now dead, right? That's what you're pointing out? Yeah, so... And now the mom's in jail. Yeah. So that's even crazier. Yeah,
and the mom, Judy, didn't even know who her dad was. So it's a whole thing not family unity, but also so sickly close in your family that you could even begin to, you know, plot this sort of destruction. I guess how I first saw it was I didn't think the kids were involved. I thought Judy had sort of maybe asked someone in the kids' school to, like, and paid those kids. That's how I thought it was going to go. I didn't think she would implicate her own children.
Right. That's exactly what I was thinking. But here we are.
We're going to need the murder, so anything's possible.
All right, well, let's move on to some listener shout-outs as we wrap up this week's episode. I just have two quick shout-outs that I wanted to give to some friends of mine who are big fans of the show.
Some friends.
Yeah, shout-out to my friend Miranda back home in Maryland. She actually stumbled across the show while reading her crime stories on Oxygen.com, which I love. She was like, yeah, I was scrolling through and I saw your face and I was like, oh my God. And I was like, yeah, you didn't know
Random.
I work here.
Yeah, I know. What a bitch.
I know, right? But thank you, Miranda. You're amazing. And
thanks, Miranda, for listening.
Always, you know, make sure you have oxygen.com bookmarked. And of course, shout out to my friend Lauren as well, who's a big fan of the show. And she sent me a message this week to say she absolutely loves me and Darren and that we have really hit our stride on the show and that she's become a really huge fan of the show. So, yeah. Thanks, Lauren.
Thanks, Lauren.
Notice that she did not say Matt has hit his stride.
Exactly.
No. Although I have to say, we should give props to Matt.
For participating this week.
For participating and actually, you know, really trying to get
this
good.
Feels good
notes.
To have like an actual producer on the show.
Weird
it almost feels like we're a real production. Michaela.
Moral of the story.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
We're getting to that. If you listen every week, you know that we get to our morals at the end after we do listener shout outs. Michaela on Twitter writes, binging hashtag martinis and murder at works makes my day go way faster. I love hashtag oxygen and so glad I found this podcast.
Aww.
Michaela, we're so happy we found you.
Yeah.
That's
exactly.
How we feel.
So and shout out to Michaela.
Absolutely. And guys, if you want to send something to Martinis and Murder Studio or you want to leave a voicemail that could be played on the podcast, all of that information is in the show notes. Go check that out. We will definitely have more voicemail soon. I asked you about it today.
Look,
my DMs have been pretty bland.
Yes.
I need you to start doing your job now.
Yes. For those who don't know, the voicemails come to my phone, but I sit around a whole bunch of people. And so for me to get those voicemails onto the show, it needs to be kind of quiet. Never quiet at the Bravo Oxygen headquarters here in New York City.
I hear a tiny violin in the background. Do you hear that? Just...
Oh, thanks. All right. I'm going to slam this computer shut now, and we are done.
No,
with this
we're
episode.
Not. We have to do morals.
Moral of the story. Matt did remind us. I don't know. This is always... What's that, Matt?
My moral?
Oh, Matt has a moral of the story. Yes, go ahead with yours.
When I have $6,000 to my name, I will not be flashing that shit around.
I don't know if I'll ever have $6,000 just able to be flashed around. I just want to put that out there.
I will only flash it to the Taco Bell person at
exactly.
The, at the drive-thru.
If Roomba or Taco Bell would like to sponsor the show, we are still available.
Still available.
Yes. Okay,
waiting
Matt,
for your call.
Matt, you can take over my moral of the day because I can't really think of one. So here's Matt.
As Lou Reed said, you can't always trust your mother.
Oh, I love a Lou Reed reference.
I don't know who that is.
Someone in my life is going to be very happy you said a Lou Reed reference.
I know exactly who that is.
So, cheers to that.
Okay, this is getting weird, and I'm ready to sign off the show.
Is it because Matt's pants were down when he said it?
Yes,
yeah, me
precisely.
Too. I thought the same thing.
All right, see you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.